Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the podcast of the European Society for Anesthesiology and Intensive Care. This episode is kindly supported by Medtronic. I am your host, Dr. Roberta Monzani. I am working in Humanitas Research Hospital in Milan, Italy, and I am the chief of the day surgical unit. Today, we will be speaking about intraoperative pain monitoring, myth or reality. And there, we have invited Dr. Helmar Bornemann Cimenti from Medical University of Graz, Austria. Welcome, Helmar. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
So, why are we talking about this topic? So in 2021, the European Society for Anesthesiologists and Intensive Care supported a survey to determine contemporary perspective on monitoring anesthetic depth and antinociception during general anesthesia. The majority of respondents were European, maybe 80%. And the majority of anesthetists, the 71%, considered hypnotic monitoring important. In contrast, we have the 62% of respondents never or only occasionally considered antinociception monitoring relevant. So the difference in the perceived importance of anesthetic depth versus antinociception monitoring was significant. Helmar, in your opinion, do you think it's a cultural problem, an economic problem, both, or is because isn't possible to guarantee intraoperative pain monitoring for all patients? Does all this idea have a rationale?
Yes, there's a clear rationale, yeah. We are not that good as we want to be in treating intraoperative pain and in preventing postoperative pain. We all know that the better the intraoperative management of pain is, the better the outcomes afterwards. This is on a short-term basis. If we're talking about things like hemodynamic stability, or if we're talking about wound infections, but this is also on a mid and the long-term basis. If we are considering post-operative mobilization, and of course the major topic of persistent post-operative pain, we know that this differs, of course, between different populations, and this differs between different kind of surgery. But in general, there is still much room for improvement here. And to come back to the beginning of your question, is it economic or is it cultural? I think it's both. Yeah. Of course, we don't have nociception monitoring in most of the operating room, I think, around in Europe. There are some, but this is not basic monitoring for every patient. And on the other side, of course, this is cost. This costs money. Yeah, some of these devices cost money for every patient because there are disposables to which.
I'm sorry, Elmar. I have a question for you. Another question. In your opinion, it's an economic problem, and I can understand what you are saying, but the complication, side effects, post-operative side effects, also are an economic problem. So how we can balance the situation?
This is completely true, as you said. It would be efficient to improve post intraoperative monitoring to prevent postoperative complications and postoperative costs, of course. But first you have to pre-finance your setting, and there's no real culture. How do we learn and how do we teach about intraoperative analgesia? This is something based on experience. This is something based on clinical judgment. Monitoring does not play a real role in our culture on both doing it and teaching it to our young colleagues.
So we need more education about the world of pain. Also, because if you have a patient with a chronic pain in a pre-admission anesthetic visit, you need to perform a different plan for to control post-operative pain, because the patient is using opioids chronically. So this can change our approach, intraoperative approach. And also because, you know, the context and the difference between sensitizing situation from nociception and the subjectivity of pain. So under general anesthesia, our patient cannot answer us, so we don't have the subjectivity. It's only our subjectivity, is my perception of another, of my patient, and I'm thinking he can have some pain, but how can I monitor this and try to have a objective result and choose the good solution? Because we give opioids all the time. The first choice could be opioids. But it's not a good choice, not all the time.
Yeah, and we are titrating them on very rough clinical parameters like blood pressure changes or heart rate changes, yeah, which of course are somehow connected to painful events or nociceptive events, but they are rough, yeah. And that's the way we do it. Yeah, that's the way we did it for the last decades. Yeah, and now within the last years, we have developed at least some approaches which allow us to objectify these measurements. Yeah? And we if we use them, what do we get? We get the best thing we can get is that we see that what we did all the years works fine for most of the patient. This means that our concepts are true, and at least I hope this for many of us. Yeah? But we will still see that for some patient, as you said, patients with chronic pain disease, patients with a high level of anxiety, for example, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't fit in this general group and they need some extra effort. Yeah, if opioid is always the best answer, yeah, we can discuss about this. Yeah, but they need something at least. Yeah, they don't fit into the box where every all the others fit. Yeah.
All the time we are speaking about patient under general anesthesia. But what do you think for patient under local regional anesthesia and with a light sedation?
Well, of course, this would be great to monitor them as well. As long as we can talk to them, of course, this is the best answer we can get. Yeah, because if the patient has pain and he tells us he has pain, yeah, he's right. Yeah. So there's no need to monitor as long as we can talk to the patient. But as you said, if there is the situation goes a little bit deeper, we are not able. Of course, this is also a good indication to monitor something which we would miss otherwise. Yeah. Of course, in the sedation, the patient, if there are nociceptive inputs, is able to move, yeah, see this somehow. But this is a late sign. Yeah, maybe we can prevent movement. Yeah, if we can titrate our anesthesia first.
In your opinion, we can use a pain monitor, like in a teaching hospital. So you have residents and you need to teach local regional anesthesia or a good depth of general anesthesia. So we can use for local regional anesthesia pain monitor just to check if our local regional anesthesia has a good result, is efficient, efficacy, and we made a good job.
Exactly. Yeah, and the teaching is a key point. Yeah, if you can put your experience on the basis of monitored patient, yeah, not only of your subjective interpretation of science, but on an objective value, yeah, of course, then the learning curve is increasing to a much higher level in a shorter time. Yeah.
And if we have some patient with diabetic patient, and so advanced diabetic, so with a peripheral neuropathy, what do you think? It's a value to use intraoperative pain monitoring also, because for this patient, we try to choose all the time local regional, if it's possible, local regional anesthesia and not general anesthesia. So we need to know if everything is working well.
Well, that's a very interesting point, because of course, as you said, this is a special population where we try to do our best, of course. On the other side, the diabetes may interact with the autonomic nerve system, of course, yeah. And as many of the commercially available products measure some kind of autonomic response, of course, there might be a bias here, yeah, an influence. This is something which we at least should have in the back of our head, yeah, if we look at the values the monitors are delivering for these patients.
If we spoke about education, our education, so we have many studies that have shown the monitoring and treating intraoperative nociceptive events can lead to less postoperative pain, so making it a critical aspect of patient care after surgery. Why don't we believe it?
The problem is a methodological one. If we try to say we have a monitoring and it is measuring pain, of course, this is not possible, because under general anesthesia, the patient has not an impaired function of his cerebral cortex. So to talk about pain, it's not really on the point. So we're talking about nociception. But even if we say we can monitor nociception, it's really hard, because we don't have a gold standard where we can compare it. So what are all these studies about? They are measuring the response to a nociceptive input. So, for example, electrical stimulation or incision of the skin, yeah, and you see, does the value change or not? This some correlation. On the other side, you measure how does the patient react to analgesic drugs. You give fentanyl, and you see that the levels are going down. Yeah, but these are very rough concepts. Yeah, you cannot really measure nociception. So you don't have nothing to compare it, yeah? You need surrogate parameters, and that's the methodological problem. What other studies did is that they look how does the patient, which was kept at low nociceptive levels during anesthesia, how does he react postoperatively? And for me, this is a very interesting approach, because that's what it's all about, yeah? If... just hypothetically, yeah, we do many things intraoperatively, but they don't have an effect postoperatively. Yeah, you can question why do we do this? Yeah, so focusing on the postoperative pain, this for me is reasonable, because this is a patient-reported outcome. Yeah, we have studies, and there are meta-analyses for different devices and different methods, yeah, which generally show nociception guided, yeah, anesthesia with any device is efficiently reducing postoperative pain significantly. But is it clinically relevant? That's another question. Yeah, That's not in the case in every device and in every kind of surgery. My estimation is that many of these studies are done with a population and or with a kind of surgery where we don't see a really big difference. Because what are we comparing? We are comparing nociception-guided anesthesia, analgesia, versus clinical standard. So yeah, clinical standard, that's not the same in every hospital with every study. So we can say that the clinical standards may differ between different houses. Yeah? We cannot say exactly what does this mean. And we say the nociception guidance adds a little extra than what we did for a general, most of the time, healthy patients. Yeah? Because most of the study are done with ASA 1 in 2 patients. Yeah, that's not the population which we really fear. Yeah, it would be interesting, as you said, the chronic pain patient, the patient with huge amount of comorbidities, yeah, the patient with depression, with anxiety. Yeah, that's what we should focus, because I think there we would, if we do studies on these patients, yeah, we would see much higher differences from our clinical standard procedures now. Yeah, my estimation.
In my opinion, we need to spend more time in the pre-admission anesthetic visit, because you said one very interesting thing. Also, we have patients with psychological pain, and in this case, we cannot use or is not the solution to prescribe opioids or painkiller. But we need another class of drug, like for anxious state or antidepressant, light antidepressant. So not all the time a painkiller, which is the best solution. And in my opinion, we need to study and to prepare better our patient. You know, we speak about a lot now prehabilitation, ERAS pathway, and tailored anesthesia. And in my job, I treat everyday patient, but I discharge in the same day. So I need to be very, I need to know that the patient is very safe when I discharge him at home, because I cannot call him, or I cannot be with him so close to prescribe other type of drugs. So I need to know the real clinical risk to develop pain, postoperative pain, not only for the surgical stress or only because I don't have all the type, all the class of drugs that I need, because not all the hospital are same, not all the country are same. So we know we have to do and to have some standard, as you said before. But in my opinion, is not enough. We need more now.
Yeah, I think this is a very, very good point. Yeah, we do a lot of testing, for example, cardiac risk evaluation. We do evaluation for postoperative nausea and vomiting. We do, of course, evaluation of the airway, but we don't do, or we don't do it most of the time, an evaluation for the risk of experiencing pain postoperatively. And there are tools. They are not even complicated. Yeah, and they would lead us. They would at least filter some patients at high risk. And even if we focus on them, this would be a great beginning. Yeah, without much effort. And this takes us back to your first question. Then, of course, it's more economic, because then we don't use a device which is expensive, more or less, for everybody, but we use it for them which are on risk. We wouldn't put a nerve electrode on every patient we put in our operating room. Yeah, this wouldn't be reasonable. But we know some patient would profit from an extra monitoring. And the same for me is with nociception monitoring. Yeah. We should filter the high risk population with the high risk surgery and concentrate there. And I think this is a helpful tool. Yeah, and as I'm pretty sure our scientific efforts will increase the next years. Yeah, we will learn more about this.
And in your opinion, we know we have different devices currently on the market known. And in your opinion, the professional know all these devices or know that are on the currently market, so they can ask, I want, I need, is important for me because I can be more efficient in my anesthesia, performing my anesthesia.
And decreasing post-operative cost, as you said in the beginning. Yes, of course, yeah. They are, I'm pretty sure they're cost efficient, yeah.
Well, and in your opinion, we have the perfect monitor of pain now.
Well, we have different solutions. Yeah? Most of them focusing on sympathetic tone in one or more approaches. Yeah, we have one device which focuses on EEG and EMG, which is a little bit other than the others. Yeah, but well, I think it's too early to judge. Yeah, it's my personal opinion that a multi-parameter approach it's more reasonable. Yeah, but I think we don't have the perfect thing. Yeah, we have things which have a longer tradition than others, so the evidence is higher. We have things which are newer. We don't know. We have things, devices which don't need disposables. Yeah, they are cheaper. Yeah, so even if they are not that efficient, they are at least reasonable on an economic basis. So every product now available has its pros and cons. Yeah, and they don't. The evidence doesn't really differ that much. Yeah, we know they all have some cutoffs where we can say this. They are predictive for post-operative pain. They are correlating to a good point with intraoperative pain signals. So it's not really one thing which is out of the range of every other. Yeah? And I will see what will be developed in the next few years. Yeah, I think not all the products, but maybe the algorithm will be changed or adapted a little bit. So I think what we have now is not what's the last answer to this chapter. Right?
We know in the future we will have something like wearable device, personalized, virtual realities. So I know, but at this moment, if we want to give some final comment, in my opinion, we must put our head on the problem, on the topics, because not all the patients are the same, not all surgery are the same, and also we need to know more, to be more educated about these topics. You have any other final comments?
The intraoperative pain management is the last resort we are not yet measuring. We are measuring everything, every other medication we gave. We are measuring the depth of anesthesia. We are measuring our hemodynamics. We are measuring
the temperature also.
But this is the only kind of drugs we are not assessing yet. Yeah, and now we have the opportunity, so we should take it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we can stay here a long time to debate and discuss because it's a very interesting topics. But we finish our time. So thank you, Helmer, for your participation. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. And the European Society of Anesthesiology Intensive Care monthly podcast on the website or various streaming platform. And we hope you will join us for the next one. Thank you very much. Thank you. Have a nice evening. Bye.
This episode is sponsored by Medtronic.